Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
How's it going?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing good. Great, perhaps. Sure. I'm doing great.
Well, we have a topic today that's near and dear to our hearts. Lifestyle inflation.
Yeah, there was like a pause there. I was like,
"Well, I thought you were going to jump in." Sorry, and, you know, tell me what it was.
I mean, this one's near and dear to both of our hearts.
Yeah,
I think it is our secret to success: avoiding this.
Now, we recently did an episode about like inflation, and do you remember what how I defined inflation?
This is like a quiz. I feel like I'm in school again.
It is a little quiz-like.
And I'm just sort of being put on the spot. Like, I know the answer, but I don't like being put on the spot like this, you know?
I thought you were a great student in high school.
Yeah, I was a great student. I have terrible recall, though. I already forgot the question. What was the question?
Oh, my God. How did I define inflation? You know what? I'm just going
to... It was like the steady increase in prices of things.
Yeah. Well done. You just needed like 45 seconds to remember it.
I just needed a minute, yeah.
So that was inflation, about the economic inflation, the price of goods and services that you buy. Lifestyle inflation is sort of the same thing. It's not a momentary blip with one large expense. It's the constant increase, the steady increase of your cost of living over your life.
Yeah, I think the difference though, Mike, is that inflation, which we did a somewhat recent episode on, is happening to all of us. And there's things we can do to mitigate our money and our financial situation, but there's nothing we can really do to stop inflation when it happens in the economy. Mm-hmm. Lifestyle inflation, also known as lifestyle creep to many people, there are things we can all do to manage that and to mitigate that. That to me is the biggest difference, right? They're both forms of inflation. One is entirely controllable and one is entirely uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially the upgrading of various things in your life. So the idea of trading up a car from a, you know, $20,000, $30,000 car that was, you know, good and safe and, you know, fairly had all the new safety features and reliable to a $70,000 top of the line Tesla or a, you know, $70,000 Mercedes or, you know, pick whatever $70,000 car you'd like to name, a Porsche. It's the idea of, you know, moving from economy class airfare and then deciding you have enough money now to shift to buying all your tickets as business class and then first class and thinking, well, you know, I deserve this. Whatever your reasons are, it's shifting from, you know, the way we lived in college, which is, I think, more of like a urban myth than actually what we ate in college, because I don't think I ate ramen noodles every day in college, but did you?
Sure.
Oh, I mean, I ate them sometimes. It wasn't like all I could eat, all I ate though. I mean, I ate in the dining hall, good stuff. But it was the idea of like, you know, eating ramen noodles in your dorm room to starting to eat out at nicer restaurants to starting to eat out at even nicer restaurants where you're, you know, going out and spending hundreds of dollars on one meal.
And all of these things might seem kind of normal, but they are so destructive to your personal finances. And Maggie, when you and I talk with people and they share their enthusiasm for retiring early, but their concerns about not being able to afford it, in almost every single situation, this is not about how much they earn. This is about how much they spend and how much their lifestyle has been inflated year over year. I mean, this is the cause of almost everybody's problems, whether or not they realize it. Now, I do want to clarify that some lifestyle inflation is good. So the ramen noodle example, like when you get to be 40 and you have two working partners and kids, like you don't want to be eating ramen noodles for every single meal like you were living out of your dorm room. That is not like an ideal lifestyle. So
it's not healthy either. FYI,
definitely not healthy. you want to inflate your lifestyle. You want to move from a crappy dorm room to an apartment on your own to owning a house in a neighborhood that you really like. Like, that sort of lifestyle inflation is valuable. It's an important part of life, but it's a slippery slope, and overspending is different for everybody.
Yeah. And when you say it's an important part of life, I almost think of it as it's a quality of life enhancement that's reasonable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing, is thinking about, that's the whole idea of inflation and creep, right? You manage how much your lifestyle inflates or creeps up over the years, and how much you're keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, we'll get into all of that, but there's different levels of how it can happen, and how much is enough, and how much makes you happy.
And so if you are hearing us talk about this right now, and you're thinking about your $5,000 mortgage or your $150,000 Tesla payment, your spending has already gotten away from you. And this is going to be pretty tough to reel it back in. And so there is a line, if you think about this visually, there is a line that where your level of happiness crosses your spending. So over time, if you think about a curved line upwards, and Maggie, I'm going to demonstrate this on video, and I hope everybody can follow along. Like, it will cost you more. It will slope up gradually. It will cost you more year over year to be happy, because your life develops. You have kids and you need a house and all this sort of stuff. But what happens is, as your income goes up, people will spend in accordance with their income. And regardless of where their level of happiness really lies. And so their spending will either go in line with their income, or it will go above their income, which means they're in debt and they are spending well above their means. But really, happiness at some point in your life is going to be you're going to find that straight line. So it kind of goes up, and you're eating ramen noodles in college, and then eventually you find out what level of kind of meals at home and eating out makes you happy. And then your cost of living, inflation aside, economic inflation aside, is kind of flat. And that is what makes you happy. Anything above that, and you're just wasting money. And you're doing it to impress people or because you think you deserve it. And people cannot control this for the most part. They will continue to spend money as long as their income goes up. And this can be just devastating on your future plans, because you will never outpace it.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to, like, you'll never outpace it, and just your point about people continuing to spend money, the average person is, even at an earlier age, is already outspending what they even make, because many people are going into debt to get a car. They're going into debt to get a house. They're going into debt to do, you know, home improvements onto their home, et cetera. So you're already leveraged, right? You're already, technically, when you go into debt to get a car, you are living beyond your means, right? You don't have the money to buy a car right now. So you're taking a loan to pay small amounts mm-hmm. of it over time. And when you continue to do that, and then, and you're already, again, you're kind of, you know, leasing your lifestyle, if you will.
I like that.
And then you're increasing that over time because of lifestyle creep. You're saying, well, I have a $400 car loan now, and I can afford that, and I make enough to pay it every month, but I'm paying a lot of interest, you know, that you may not see and feel every day. And then you get a raise, and, you know, a couple years later, you're like, well, I can afford that $600 or $700 car loan now because I make more money now, right? It's like a lot of the lifestyle creep or lifestyle inflation is actually leased, right? You don't even own it. You're just going further into debt to do this, which is, you know, just an additional point to try to keep this in check and kind of proactively manage this as early in life as possible, while still maintaining, you know, the level of, you know, happiness and lifestyle that you want and need.
And another great example of this, Maggie, is people's tendency to purchase bigger and nicer homes. It's the same thing. Like, you are constantly taking out another 30-year mortgage to go buy a bigger house in a nicer neighborhood that costs a lot more money. And I think some people get the impression that they are making money on their house because they sell it for more than they bought it. And we talked about this in some episodes before, but with all of the costs of selling and maintaining and owning a home, as well as the interest on a loan, if you continually update to new 30-year mortgages, yeah, you are not making any money. You are losing money in most cases. Yeah. And people just cannot get out of the tendency or the need to continually upgrade their homes And and homes and cars and vacations, these are all things which are not, you know, $100 dinners. These are tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. I mean, this has a big impact on your life.
Yeah. I mean, Mike, how long have you been in your home now?
Ooh, good question. 10 years? 10 years.
Yeah. I think I've only had two homes in my life and had one for 5 years and then one for about 13, 14 years now. But I think that, just to use ourselves as examples, you know, that's one of the things that has allowed us to reach financial independence is staying in our homes and having, you know, reasonably sized and valued homes. That, you know, there was a time in my early 20s when the home I'm in now was a stretch, but I never inflated it. Mm-hmm. I kept the same house. And look, a lot of people that were continuing on the trajectory of, you know, promotions and increased salaries that I was on were living in much nicer, larger, fancier homes and neighborhoods than I was. And I kept it. And that's what allowed me to be able to pay off my mortgage, because it was a smaller mortgage to be able to pay off in the end, and to ultimately retire early. I mean, the housing piece is a huge factor in it.
So let's talk about the causes of lifestyle inflation, because I think for a lot of people, it happens unknowingly. And
I think a word I really like, Mike, sorry to cut you off, is gradually. It happens gradually. So gradually, you almost don't even notice it, which is unknowingly.
I think there's really four things that cause lifestyle inflation. The first, and maybe the biggest one, is pressure from peers and society to showcase your wealth and your level mm-hmm. of income. And so if you're starting as a manager in a company and you live in a certain neighborhood, and then you become a director and a vice president and a senior vice president, like, you want to show that progression, and therefore you keep buying bigger houses and nicer neighborhoods.
Yeah. Since I was just using my house as an example, if you took my income level, and as we're recording this, I technically am still employed, got a couple weeks left. If you took, but you know, what's fun to say is by the time this airs, I will be fun employed, early retired, whatever you want to call it. But if you took my current income level and compared my home to other people making my income, or my husband and I's combined income, whatever you want to call it, and looked at our houses, I'm pretty sure mine would physically look on the bottom. I'm still very like nice, respectable, safe home. Like, I just mean like respectable, like well-kept home. Respectable is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? But it would be like the least nice and the least fanciest neighborhood. And even within my neighborhood, the not a fancy looking house.
But it's all going to level out, because soon you're going to be unemployed, and then it'll just be two unemployed people living in that reasonable, okay house on down
exactly,
the street, right?
Right. Then it'll seem like a mansion, considering we have no money coming in.
All right. So the second point about what causes lifestyle inflation is an internal desire to reward yourself for hard work. If you do not have a vision for your life, like financial independence, as you create more wealth, you really don't have a good use for it. And so you think in your mind, subconsciously, the best thing to do, reward yourself for that, continue to buy nicer and better and bigger things to reward yourself.
Yeah, the I deserve this mm-hmm. answer on a lot of things, which I've been a victim of also.
Yeah, like, you deserve, you know, that new treadmill, Maggie.
I did deserve that new treadmill. I do deserve that new treadmill, and I use it. I love it. Now my kids are using it lately too. It feels even more, turns out I shouldn't have built a fancy treehouse in the backyard. I should have just bought a fancy treadmill. Yeah. The whole family uses it. I really like the kind of thinking you're talking about on kind of just where the lifestyle inflation is coming from psychologically, because I think so many people, myself included, often focus on the, it's a peer pressure society trying to like keep up with the Joneses, right? Show off what I have, you know, all of that. And so I think it's so interesting to kind of go through these other ones, like a desire to reward myself for all of my hard work. I'd rather have freedom to reward myself for all of my hard work, financial
freedom. Definitely. It's the best. Yeah. All right. So the third point along those same lines is lifestyle inflation can be caused by a need to give your career progression meaning. And this is similar to rewarding yourself for hard work. But, and I want to be sensitive to how I phrase this, because, you know, there are a lot of important careers and you could be doing good work for the world and making an impact on people's lives. But for the most part, corporate jobs are just kind of a you know, people retire and people move up and you make more money. And that's just how the system works. Like, there isn't a whole lot of life meaning in all of this stuff. And if you are desperate to find a lot of meaning in it, then becoming an executive, going to conferences, getting a membership to the country club, these sorts of things give that career progression meaning, and it costs a lot of money to do so, to like get into a certain social circle.
Mike, when you first said this around a need to give your career progression meaning, to me, again, it was like a new thought on this. And even the way you were just saying it, I would put a little bit of a different angle on it, because I read it differently originally when you, or I digested it differently when you said it. Very similarly, but different in the sense that for me, it was, it's the idea of, you know, my career progression came with cost to my life and trade-off, right? I had less time for myself. I had less time for my family. I was working more hours. I was giving more of myself to work and less of myself to me. And I almost thought when you first said this, and I think it's part of what you mean here too, is me thinking, well, but at least I'm able to get a nicer house, get a nicer car, right? So it all makes sense. It's a trade-off. You know, it's all this, it's, I can't think of another word other than trade-off, but it's this like cycle of life of like, well, I'm putting so much into my career, but I'm getting things back out financially that I can use to give myself a lifestyle that I think will make me happy and make up for the fact that I'm giving up all these other things to my job.
That is much better articulated than what I was saying. But yes, that you are exactly correct. And this is one that is deeply subconscious. And I don't think anyone would be able to take a step back and realize that this is why they're spending so much money on their lifestyle.
Until they listen to this podcast
episode. That's right. And then it's going to be a wake-up call.
Yeah.
All right. So the last item. The last cause for lifestyle inflation is that the idea of paying for services will save you time or create convenience in your life. And we've talked about this before, how if you start outsourcing all this stuff, it doesn't save you as much time as you think it does. And one problem with any of these services, and you have to go fix it, and all of a sudden you're deep into an additional time commitment. So I heard about some crazy service. Maybe you've heard about this too, but there is a group that will...
Pump your gas?
No. I don't know about that.
That one's crazy.
Yeah, that one's kind of crazy. But they will come and they will like seed your yard with Easter eggs. So we just had Easter. Oh, so you pay them.
I thought you were going to say like seed your yard with seed. I was like, Mike, that's very common. That's crazy. I know. I don't mean that in a judgmental way. From an entrepreneurial standpoint, impressive that you've created. It's like the people that will come up and put Christmas lights up for you.
Yeah.
They will do. Do they stuff the eggs?
Yeah.
I spent like an hour stuffing Easter eggs, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well,
it's like an annual tradition.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to go find this service. You have to manage their work. You have to inspect their work. You have to pay them. This is not as great of a service as you might think.
That is hilarious. Also, we always like a year later, I'll find...
Yeah.
Like an old decrepit Easter egg or something. And half the time I know where I put the egg, so I can make sure they've all been collected, you know, and not like, so I don't find like gross things in my yard a year later. So if someone else hid them, it'd be like extra hard but that's fascinating.
So the point is, there are infinite ways that you can spend your money to quote unquote simplify your life. And it may or may not really create convenience for you.
But it costs a lot more. Back to the inflation, right? Inflates the...
So all of these things cause you to spend more on your lifestyle. But the really profound opportunity that you have is to find the level of spending that really makes you the happiest. And it comes down to like each individual activity and knowing, you know, what type of restaurant makes you happy, what type of travel, what type of hotel that you stay at really makes you happy. And if you can identify this, that becomes like a really powerful tool in controlling your life.
Yeah. And look, I recognize that us saying just go identify it is easier said than done.
Oh, yeah. It takes years.
Yeah. It takes years. It takes sometimes decades for people, right? Like I think about the evolution I've made throughout my 20s, 30s, now into my early 40s. And I've got, you know, many more decades to continue to evolve in this area. Figuring out and really being introspective about what makes you happy versus what you're doing for other people. I have to catch myself on this now and think, like, I like On running shoes. They cost about $150 a pair. I run regularly, at least 3 days a week. It's an important part of my, like, mental and physical fitness. I like the way they aesthetically look. And sometimes I have to look down and ask myself, do I buy these shoes for me, or do I buy them to look a certain way to other people? And again, the answer is different on many things in life, right? But on these shoes, I buy them for me. They make me happy. I can afford them. And I'm still able to reach a high savings rate. And I highly control many other aspects of spending in my life. And so for me, I feel good about it. And I buy them twice a year.
You buy them twice a year, Maggie?
Yeah, because I put a lot of miles on these. I walk a lot in addition to my running. So, I mean, they wear out. That, like, my ones right now, they've got, like, holes in the back and the front. I need a new pair soon. I got to hurry up and buy them before I'm unemployed.
Right. So, Maggie, that's actually kind of a good point, because if you're...
Can you not caveat my points with it's kind of a good point? Like, you're so sort of like, oh, that's shockingly a good point.
Well, your points are let's
they're 50-50, yeah, right?
So you, on running shoes, $4,000 treadmills, your $35,000 Subaru.
Yeah. I love them all. They're monitored and controlled portions of my lifestyle inflation. I was able to have those things and still retire at 41. So boom, Mike.
Fair point. So if you can control all of this stuff and be introspective, the word you mentioned, that was a good word choice, then this isn't a bad thing. But if we were to only highlight these examples, which I love to do because I love to pick on you, it would think that you have a crazy lifestyle inflation, but you are not buying a $70,000 car. You're not buying two of those cars at the same time. You're not leasing the cars. You're not buying a whole basement full of expensive gym equipment, and you're not buying On running shoes and five pairs of dress shoes and all these other things. Yeah. Like, you have a very focused use of your money for the things that you know make you happy. So as much as I make fun of you, and I will continue to do it because it's fun, you actually are very thoughtful.
Intentional
of what you spend your money on.
And to the bigger point, if it outpaces my earnings and savings rate, that's where it really spells a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can afford those things and still save at the rate I want to and accomplish the things I want in life. And if I couldn't, I wouldn't necessarily be willing to, like, work another year to have that car or to have that treadmill or, you know, some of those things. And so I think it's often, you know, just the idea. I think you talk about this in your book, Mike, which we'll put a link to. We don't talk about your book enough, but you wrote a really fantastic book.
Thank you.
That is called
Your New Relationship with Money.
Your New Relationship with Money. I knew the name. I just wanted you to say it.
You're quizzing me?
Sounds better when you say it. It's like when I ask my kids their birthdays and we're filling out something in a form and they get, like, offended. I'm like, I know your birthday. I just need you to read it to me so I can fill this form out faster. One of the things you talk about in your book is that a reasonable rule should be that your savings should increase by the same rate as your income does, right? So if you're making $50,000 in 1 year and you're able to save $5,000 of it, and in year two, you're making $55,000, you should be able to save also 10%, which is $5,500. Right. And 10% is even, you might want to get even more aggressive than that, depending on what your financial goals are. But that's a way to make sure that you're beating the concept of lifestyle inflation, right? That you're constantly making sure that your savings are staying at the same rate that things increase at. And again, you might even know, in a world where inflation is as high as it is right now, you might want to say, I want to beat it, right? I want to make up for inflation by having a, you know, even higher savings rate year over year if I can.
And if you were to continue that example, in the first year, you earn $50,000 and you save $5,000. In the future, if you're making $100,000, if you're only saving $5,000, it means you are spending $95,000. That is lifestyle inflation, and that will just kill your long-term financial goals. But if you kept your expenses the same, and instead of saving $5,000, you saved $50,000, so you continued with the same level of spending, the power, the compounding power of that growth is going to catapult you into financial independence faster than you ever thought possible. But most people are not like this. They earn $100,000, they spend $95,000, because they don't bother to control
their
expenses.
Or they earn $100,000 and they spend $110,000.
Yeah,
back to the debt examples. Worse.
All right, so what can you do about it? We've now been talking about why it happens and explaining it in some level of detail, but there are some specific things that you can do to control this.
You just stop it.
Yeah, episode just stop done. It. Just figure out what makes you happy and then stop it. That's right. Show over.
Change your mindset. Stop.
All right. So the first one, and we talk about it often, is to track your expenses. It is easy to let your spending inflate when you are not looking at it. And I think, Maggie, you know, we've had this experience with a lot of people. As soon as people start actually like looking at what they're spending money on, they're like, oh my God, I had no idea I was spending so much. That is a powerful tool.
Yeah, it's super powerful. And it's powerful. And I'll say it's also overwhelming to many people. So don't feel like it's something you have to do for the rest of your life. Like, Mike, you find joy in tracking your expenses.
No, I love it.
And I'll be honest, lately, Greg and I are actually finding joy in it also. But if you don't find joy in it, do it for a period of time and then keep an eye on it, right? And then decide when, if you feel like things are getting out of hand, do it again. Like, I always compare it to calorie tracking, right? You don't need to do it all the time, every day. But when you need to get things in check and really understand what's happening, it's a super powerful tool. And we'll put some links in the show notes to the episode 15. That was one of our very first our 15th episode called Expense Tracking Gone Wild, where we talk all about expense tracking. And I'll put a link to our expense tracking spreadsheet, which you can use, but there's a ton of other ones out there. You can make your own, or you can use Mint, or there's a ton of different tools we talk about. Number two, in terms of what you can do to manage lifestyle inflation or lifestyle creep, is keep your end goal in mind and understand and appreciate that there are always trade-offs, right? This is a little bit of like delayed gratification, even is I think I put this in the same category of, you know, if you want, I use that example, right? When you're giving me a hard time about the Subaru and the treadmill and all that, I was still able to have those things and retire early, which I'm very, you know, fortunate to be in that position and have worked very hard to be able to do. But there are people wherever you're at in life, right? You need to figure out your own trade-offs, right? If you want to retire early, you might not be able to buy a Tesla, right? Actually, my kid was saying something to me the other day about somebody else's Tesla. She's ridden in it and she like really wants me to get a Tesla. And I'm like, stop it. I don't need anyone in my ear telling me to buy a Tesla. I got my own, internal dialogue going on. I don't need more of it. And she was talking about somebody's puppies, and we're not like an animal. I love animals so much that I don't eat them and I'm vegan, but we are not an animal household. I'm allergic to a lot of things and we just aren't. And I know this is a lot of context. Mike is like looking at me like, tell me about your allergies, Maggie. But anyway, she was like on me about it the other day, as she does sometimes. And I was like, I actually had to like be careful what I said, because like for a second I was like, but I'm not going to be working in 2 weeks and you're really excited to have more time with me. And so recognize that those decisions come with trade-offs. And I was explaining to her, I was like, I could buy a Tesla and keep working. Is that what you would like? And she very quickly was like, no, actually I'm good. We don't need a Tesla.
I love
that. She's 10. I know.
That.
And she's great. Yeah. Remember when we had them on an early episode, actually, and she said she would rather me work more to have more money.
We should do this again.
And then took it back. Yes, we should do it again.
We should do it in a few months after your trip to Europe. Yes.
Oh, we could do it in Austria. All the kids will be there.
What happens if they are sick of driving in a car with you around Europe for 4 weeks by the time we're doing that? Oh, you're
right. They might be unhappy with this. Maybe we'll do a test one. They might want us to go back to work.
Maybe not air it. All right. The next thing you can do about it, and this is something that is so near and dear to my heart, and we did one of my favorite episodes about it ever, is that remember that nobody cares about your lifestyle. They might see it. They notice it. They do not care. They don't care about your stuff. They don't care about your clothes. They don't care where you go on vacation. People do not care about you. They are so consumed with their own lives and so worried about themselves that they just do not have the capacity to care about you. And so if you are spending money, going back to the causes of lifestyle inflation, if you are spending money to impress other people, you should just work really hard to get over that, because it is not doing any good for you.
Mike, this is one of my favorite topics to discuss with you, because you're so good at it. And we did a whole episode on it, episode 95, on how to stop caring what other people think and start living. But I love how you say they notice, but they don't care. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't mean they don't notice and observe it for a second, but like it doesn't affect their day-to-day life. Right. They look at it. They might have a ping of a judgment or a jealousy or some sort of emotion, but they move on and focus on what they're focused on in the moment and in their lives. And it's a passing, fleeting thought. And we talk about this in that episode. If it's not, if it is somebody who really, for some reason, they are so bent out of shape that you have, you know, that you have those shoes and not these shoes, or that your house is on whatever. Those aren't really the people you probably want in your life and that you want to be trying to, quote, impress in some way, right? It almost is ironic because if somebody does care, I'm all of a sudden like, wait, it bothers you that I do or don't have XYZ? I don't care what you think anymore all of a sudden. You know, it's like this funny cycle.
Yeah, that's right. Just think to your closest friends. Do they care what your title is at work? Do they care what car you drive or what neighborhood you live in? They like you for you, and you are friends with them for other reasons, not your stuff. So don't try to spend money to gain friends if that's part of your objective. It just doesn't work.
And it doesn't mean they're not going to be happy for you when you get some promotion at work, but they're doing it because they're your friend to celebrate you, not because...
Yeah.
You know, now they want to hang out with you more or something. Okay, number four, in terms of what you can do to fight this, is take the opportunity to reevaluate your spending and what level of happiness it will actually create for you. So think about, you know, we gave some examples throughout this discussion, but really think about what you need to be happy, right? And prioritize and be intentional. And you know, we often say, you know, it's personal finance. So everybody's different on what really matters to them. I was talking to some people the other day and they don't really prioritize or care about travel. And I was like, and that's the number one thing we spend money on as a family, right? So they were talking about eating out. And I was like, well, if you're eating out and that's what makes you happy and you're not spending in 50 other categories, like don't sweat that you spend a good bit of money eating out because that's what you prioritize and that's what you're intentional about and it's social and their experiences for you. And so I think everybody's kind of what truly makes them happy is different. And I just think, like we said earlier, like it's not a magical thing where you're just going to like sit down for 5 minutes and think about what makes you happy. You're really going to have to start. I think that's where I was giving the on shoe example, right? You're really going to have to think about some of these things and ask yourself some honest questions and look in the mirror and say, am I doing this for me? And does this make me happy? Or am I doing this to keep up appearances? You know, do I want a new house because it's going to look cool to other people, but I'm going to be stressed by that mortgage? What do I really want? Like, what will make me happy?
And there is an easy way that you can go about testing this. And I give some examples of this in my book. And I came up with this because one of my friends is always giving me a hard time about the cost of the wine that we buy at Aldi and how she would never be able to do that because she likes wine too much. But if you drink...
Did you do a taste test with her?
No, she lives out in California.
Oh, sorry.
But we're always joking about wine. So if you buy $50 bottles of wine and you're like, I have to drink nice wine. Like what would be, I can't do without this. I need to have a certain lifestyle. Try buying a $40 bottle of wine and see if you are any less happy with it. And then a $30 bottle of wine. And then at some point, once you get to that $10 bottle of wine, you're gonna be like, well, this is terrible. And then you go back to the $20 bottle of wine, but you are no longer spending $50 and you have found that level of happiness. And you can do this with, let's take hotel rooms, you know, if you are staying in a $700 a night hotel room and then your next day is $500 and then $300 and $200, at some point you're going to be like, this hotel was just too crappy for me and I was not happy with my trip. And you will know that is the level of your spending that makes you happiest. And you need to just kind of work your way up and down until you find that sweet spot. Don't just make assumptions about what level of spending is necessary to be happy.
Yeah, I think it's the level and then also the categories of stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I just think, again, I think it's all a trade-off and a compromise. And you've got to think about what the things are that you want to lean into and spend more on. And I tend to say, look, you're managing your own money, so you can do whatever you want. But in my opinion, it shouldn't be every category. Right. You should just, especially if you have goals to retire early and you have, you know, financial freedom goals, you're going to need to make some trade-offs and you're going to need to delay some gratification and just think about, you know, what things you want to lean into and what things you want to lean out of.
Yeah. Excellent point, Maggie. All right. So these top three takeaways, which we're going to end on, are going to be a little more philosophical. We went through some tactical advice to how to control lifestyle inflation. And because this is such a near and dear topic to my heart, these are the three takeaways that I have in this chapter of my book about lifestyle inflation. So you're going to, if you haven't read it yet, this is
getting
a little
a sneak peek, a
spoiler. All right. Number one, if lifestyle inflation becomes a habit, you'll never have enough to be happy.
Number two, there will always be someone richer, something nicer, something more expensive, something more luxurious. You'd constantly be chasing something else.
And number three, you should focus on inflating your savings rate, not your spending rate. That's how you're going to achieve financial independence.
Boom. That's a big one, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks,
Maggie. We should have said that one earlier. That's like a... You're like saving that for the end.
I know. I wanted to end on an impactful point.
Savings inflation. We should make that a new snowplow savings inflation.
Oh, yeah. We got
a whole
bunch of good t-shirt material.
So many terms we've coined here. I want to do a shirt that says nobody cares. I feel like that might offend people if you walk around with that shirt, though.
Yeah.
But guess what?
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we would love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370, or you can always hit us up on Instagram.
All right. Thanks, Maggie. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Bye.